Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb, and welcome in to All Ball, the all basketball podcast that you need to download, subscribe, and rate to. Hope you've really enjoyed previous All Balls. We're getting ready for the NBA Finals. They tip off, not kick off, they tip off tomorrow at the time of this recording. So today at the time this drops. So tonight, you have the NBA Finals. And I'm fascinated, just fascinated, by how this matchup's going to shake out. You know, you have the Raptors now have finals experience with a former MVP in Kawhi Leonard and a former big shot maker in Danny Green, although he hasn't made a shot yet in the playoffs. They have Kyle Lowry, who's a former All-Star, but up until late in that last series did not appear to be of All-Star form, and now he'll have to play against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, although there are guys to hide him on when KD is out of the game. I mean, that's a big change for them. But the finals should be really interesting. I'll get to my breakdown in a second. Want to tell you, Henry Abbott from True Hoop will join me in today's pod. We'll talk about all things. Lakers, Celtics, potential breakup of the Rockets. Is that smart? And I'll get his thoughts on the NBA Finals.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so here's like just a kind of quick take on the matchups. OG Anunoby coming back, you know, he's coming back from an appendicitis. Now, obviously, he could give them a massive, massive boost, even coming off the bench. I will tell you that when you haven't played in a while, going from zero, you're not playing, you know, being in a hospital, to the 100 miles an hour of playing in an NBA Finals is really, really difficult. The question for the Warriors is how much can they sustain time without Klay or Steph on the floor. Right? There's a reason that they came from 17, 18, and 17 down against the Portland Trailblazers, because their depth, which is already in question. Remember, you're two guys deeper into the bench than you initially wanted to be in terms of the construct of this team. You don't have DeMarcus Cousins. That means you're starting Kevon Looney. You're starting Andre Iguodala. You don't have Kevin Durant. That means you're starting both of them, which greatly depletes your bench. Now the first guy off your bench is, you know, Sean Livingston, who can only play 20 minutes and can't physically match up with Kawhi Leonard. You know, now you have to play Quinn Cook off the bench, which, you know, Fred VanVleet can struggle athletically. Obviously, he was unbelievable at shot-making games 4 through 6, making 87% of his three-pointers. But the point is that Toronto's bench becomes an unbelievable strength, and their starters aren't terrible. In addition to which, if you match up big for big and they put Marc Gasol out there without DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol is going to be really, really effective. So if both teams were at full strength, I don't think it's crazy competitive. I think the Warriors win. But the Warriors are not at full strength. They're not close. It's interesting. You'll hear lots of people mention Kevin Durant. Nobody mentions DeMarcus Cousins, although they may both come back and play. Now, if DeMarcus Cousins does come back and play, the other part about Cousins that has always given me issues in terms of how good will they actually be is that Cousins is a guy that hurts them defensively. They can't switch five, and they can't just hide Cousins because they also have to hide Steph Curry, who plays hard defensively but is fairly ineffective on the basketball against bigger, stronger, more athletic players. So I think the Warriors, they'll have a shooter's chance to steal one of these games in Toronto. But I think this is going to be one of those, you understand the value to Kevin Durant, just like the Raptors understand the value to Kawhi Leonard. All those other guys, the ball movement is great. But at some point, you need a guy to just go get you a bucket. You do. You just need a guy to go get you a bucket. And you look at every championship team, and they've always had a guy who's a bucket getter. And I know you're sitting there going like, well, isn't Steph Curry? He is, but a lot of times he needs a mismatch. Now, what's going to be interesting is, will Anunoby be back? And if he's healthy enough, now all of a sudden they can go a lot smaller, a lot more athletic, but that doesn't appear to be till game two or maybe far beyond. I think the Warriors win this series, but I think there's going to be some really, really hard-fought games. Maybe they can steal one in Toronto early, or maybe they wait for KD to ride in on the white horse, maybe in a game three. But I think they're going to need Kevin Durant to win this thing. And I think by the end of it, much like when we saw Kevin Durant against the Clippers or against the Rockets, people started to understand just how talented he is to match up with Kawhi Leonard, who's playing at the peak of his NBA career. Well, let's welcome him in. He's the one and only Henry Abbott from True Hoop. He joins us here on the All Ball podcast. Henry, how are you?
Great, Doug. How are you?
Good, man. I want to get to that we could have KD and we do have Kawhi in the finals. I want to get some of your thoughts on the Lakers and on the Baxter Holmes piece. But even the possible breakup of the Rockets, which isn't as surprising to me as it may be to some. But first, for you, look, you've become a major kind of player in the coverage of the NBA. I'm fascinated. Like, how'd you grow up around basketball? How did basketball become such an incredible passion of yours?
Oh, it's simple, man. I just grew up in Portland, Oregon, where we don't have football or baseball. that's the deal. And when I was in seventh grade, we had a lot of homework. And I was supposed to be doing my homework, but that's the same year that I got my first Sony Walkman. Mm-hmm. And so I could look
homework. The waterproof Sony Walkman, because so many of those were submerged, right? The yellow ones, right.
Yeah. I recently brought up the yellow one, and no one in the room knew what I was talking about. I'm so glad you said that, because it's, of course, the yellow one. That was the best one. I was so excited to have that. But, yeah, I could look like I was doing my homework. I sat in my room with the book open, and I just listened to Bill Schonley call the Blazers games. And that's how I became an NBA fan. And then eventually, my family's English, so they don't know anything about basketball, and it's kind of cute. But eventually, my dad was really nice and realized that I liked this, and he got some tickets to a Blazer game. And we were late because he was late leaving work, and he drove really fast, and he drove me straight to the baseball stadium. Because I'm like, Dad, no, they play basketball inside. We got to go to the other stadium. He's like, oh, okay.
No way. That's amazing. Those are your parents. That's so funny because, so this is in a kind of related way, right? So I coach my son. I have an AAU program, and my wife, who she grew up in a small town but played kind of every sport, she tells me about like some of the parents on how they literally have no idea what they're looking for. They don't understand anything about the game. She's like, you got to hear the comments of some of these people. And then coaching in baseball, we had a kid who had never played before. And the mom, like last game of the season, comes up to my wife and she's like, hey, they have other gloves if you're left-handed. She's like, yeah, well, because my son's left-handed.
Poor kid.
And she goes, because actually my son is left-handed and everything else, but he's been playing right-handed here in his first year in baseball. So he shows up to the playoffs with like a left-handed mitt trying to throw and swing, you know, and I was like, we'll wait till next year on it. But anyway, that's amazing that those are your parents. So then
I'm that kid. I've had the wrong glove. I'm exactly that kid.
So you went to college where?
NYU, baby.
So you go from Portland, Oregon, which I'm sure you've been back, is, you know, bustling, and it's a really cool but very packed Northwest city, right? It's sprawling. Mm-hmm. It's on the water. But it is a big city and a port city, but it's a different – what was the vibe like going from Portland to New York?
Oh, shocking. And I wasn't one of these people – I mean, I had traveled a lot of places. My family's from Europe, whatever. But I hadn't spent time in New York City, and this was 1991 when it was pretty harsh. You know, now it's all baby strollers and stuff, right? It's a different story. But in 91, it was alarming, eye-opening. And ultimately, I learned to love it so very much that I don't ever want to live far from it. I feel like New York is kind of more honest than any other place, more multicultural, more something. It's kind of addictive to me. But then I literally, after my first year, I applied to transfer because it was just too intense. I couldn't take it.
Your first job out of college is where?
CBS News.
Doing what?
I was a network radio desk assistant, which was a really cool job, very intense. We were on the hour, top of the news every hour, and we had to beat the whole world. And I literally would make phone calls. I mean, the whole time was just like intense. But literally, I would make phone calls routinely, like, you know, ma'am, did the plane hit your house? It's like, no. Do you happen to know the name of the number, the people who live over there? Okay. I'm just trying to get the people on the phone who can tell the story. Or Senator D'Amato, can you hold, please? Like, it was a lot of that kind of stuff.
So how did you make your way to sports?
I worked in, like real news for several years, and then I started freelancing for magazines. And then I went to a high school reunion thing from my Oregon high school, but it was in New York City.
So what high school?
Five people there.
What high school?
I went to Oregon Episcopal School.
Big school.
Tiny place. Graduating class of like 50.
Yeah.
And then I was at this thing, and one of the other people there, who I sort of knew in high school, but not well, was named Anna Gebbe. And I noticed that in the masthead of Slam Magazine, there was the managing editor's name was Anna Gebbe. And I was like, oh, the high school is Anna Gebbe. I wonder if it's her. And so when she walked in, I was like, are you the managing editor of Slam Magazine? And she was just delighted and amazed that anyone would have noticed that. And I don't know, 6 months later, she was asking me if I would do like this one assignment, and there was this other one. And the next thing you know, I was like doing pretty much all basketball. I didn't even, honestly, Doug, it didn't occur to me that you were allowed to have a career that fun. Like, yeah. I thought that you just had to do, like, you know, murder stories and stuff, because that's just what work was like. And you would follow the NBA in your spare time, right? But when I left that, I was like, oh, my, you can actually, of course I want to do this, right? If you're actually allowed to write about the NBA all day, yeah, of course. Why would we not do that?
Yeah, I a lot of times when I go speak to little kids, and sometimes high school kids as well, I'll say, like, how many of you guys, you know, love basketball? Have them raise their hands. How many of you guys talk basketball? And they raise their hands. How many of you guys get paid to love and talk about basketball? And none of them raise their hand. I'm like, see, got it. Like, it's all, you always a moment where I'm like, it's kind of a cool gig I got going here. Okay, so I think it was 2005 you started. That was back when the blogs, 2005. Now, 2019, everybody runs for president. Back in 2005, everybody started a blog, right? What was the early?
Did I mention running for president? Did I forget to mention that?
You forgot to mention that. You forgot to mention that. Join the club. Okay, so 2005, you start True Hoop, right?
Yes, correct. You've done your homework.
How did that start? I'm hacking away, and I'm emailing a buddy on AOL, and all of a sudden I go, like, you know, I should start a blog.
It was kind of like that, yeah. I was writing for magazines about the NBA, and magazines have this tremendously long hangover, right? So that's a weird way to put that. You're working on a story, you send it to the editors, and it's in print, like, 8 weeks is fast, sometimes 12 weeks, sometimes a year later, which means in the meantime, you've had to develop a lot of sources and contacts and insight that you just can't put anywhere, because a lot of stories just won't last that long. So I was kind of sitting on this like surplus of like insight. At the same time, an English guy who was a friend of mine in Brooklyn, Alex, he was an ardent fan of the soccer team Norwich City, and blogs were happening, and he was suddenly able to follow Norwich City like never before from Brooklyn. And he bugged me. He bugged me at whatever, someone's backyard barbecue or whatever. Oh, you should start a blog. You're a sports writer. You should have a blog. And I was like, basically, Alex, I'm not a dork, so I shouldn't have a blog. I was literally like, I said that to him 10 times. And then finally at a Christmas party, he started it for me. He hauled me over to the corner of the room, and he started a free blogger blog for me. He's like, just do some stuff on here. Just write some things here. And within like a few weeks, I had learned, I could tell that it was like a much more vibrant and interesting way to relate than like normal website stuff. And then I put a research hat on. I really learned about blogs and how they work. And I went to meetings and I read all of the latest thinking about it and read books on it and everything. And then I was like, I think I'm going to try to make my career via blog. I think it's just going to be a better use of my time than what I'm doing now. So I started True Hoop.
You start True Hoop, and then 2009 you came to... When did you come to ESPN? Was it 2009?
2007.
2007? 2007, and that was you were in the with a digital group, right? That was like down in the basement, or were you with the mag in New York?
I never was in the office. I was mostly here. The group that I worked for was on the fourth floor, of building four, I think, for the entire time. So that was like, I reported to Chris Ramsey when I first got there.
Sure.
Jack Ramsey's
son, by the way, who's good
Jack
dude.
Jack Ramsey's son.
Yep.
Yeah. And actually, I spent one whole final, that Celtics-Lakers finals, 2010, maybe? I forget what year it was. I spent the whole finals with Dr. Jack. We sat together every game, and we did like kind of we called the game live on the internet with me typing his words, basically.
Wow.
What a treat that was. Amazing man. So I was one of, maybe ESPN.com's like 8 NBA writer at the time, something like that, working with all Mark Stein and Jay Donde and Chris Sheridan, et cetera, Don Hollinger, Chad Ford.
Sure.
And then I took over that group. They asked me to be the editor of it starting in 2014. And I was like the boss for a few years and then left ESPN amid all those changes a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to go out on your own?
Great. I mean, I had 22 months left on my contract, so I did a lot of stuff that I would never have had time to do. I became like Dad of the Year, I think. I built a lot of things with my hands, and I put in just an immense amount of research into this passion of mine, which is kind of weird. So the blog's called True Hoop. The hoop part is pretty obvious, but the true part got me really thinking over the last decade or so. Like, there's a lot of things people don't believe, just even if you tell them the truth, or we delude ourselves, right? Like, what is that all about? Why am I fascinated by the truth? Why is it hard for people to see the truth? How do our brains work? How about bias? All this stuff. So I just did tons of work, really kind of background for future projects of just like, what's the deal with us and our struggle with the truth? Of course, while this is happening, Donald Trump becomes president. Yeah. And it became a bigger, hotter topic, right? So, but I feel like right now I'm sitting on a lot of insight into, you know, well, I could talk about this. Don't get me started on this one, Doug. I could talk about this all day. But I'm looking, I'm standing here in my office looking at all of these books that are like kind of what I got to dig into in the middle of my career. And now relaunched True Hoop as an independent new media company. It's a subscription newsletter with my buddy David Thorpe, who I know you know.
Love him. Yep.
And we're kind of diving into some new products to add to that, podcast and digital video, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So we're trying to apply these lessons, you know, try to apply all the things that I learned here in the attic and at ESPN.
Give me one thing that is true. Like, just give me like a little teaser. Give me something that's true that people don't believe that fascinates you.
Look, for most of my career, it's been, you know, the Lakers aren't magical. Right? It started with Kobe and crunch time for me, right? People just wanted to stop thinking and stop doing basketball and just say, look, like, he has it, right? Like, so it's going to be a good shot. But, you know, once we had the ability to look at his field goal percentage at crunch time, he was shooting 25%. So then I write that he's shooting 25%, and the primary reaction is, yeah, but he's amazing, right? And it's like, oh, I don't know what to say to that, you know, like, 25% sucks. You can't win games with that strategy, right? Like, he might be really good skill-wise, but that's not a good strategy for sure, right? The choices that lead to that are, you know, you could do better running a regular play and letting whoever gets open take the shot, right? Like, you can beat 25% a lot of ways. So that's one. That's a big one for me. But
it's a great one, because we do this thing on TV, which is, I mean, it's super, super silly. We do this clutchness thing, right? Everybody has he's clutch, he's a choker. And there's so much that goes into it. And obviously, you know, numbers can support things. I would only push back from this perspective that, like, I saw Nick Wright broke out a stat about, you know, like last 10 seconds. I don't even know what the games are, like LeBron's numbers, you know, shooting as opposed to Kobe or Kawhi or KD or whatever. Or maybe it's Jordan and Kobe, but like the defense is so different that the whole sport has been turned completely on its head, where there's no one in the lane. And if there is, you know, it's a pogo stick, which there's not. When Jordan played, there was a power forward and a center in the lane, and the small forwards were Scottie Pippen, right? I heard Ron Artest talking about, you know, earlier today about how, you know, he likes big guys and they just have no place. You know, power forwards have no place in the sport as a true power forward. They have to be able to be a small ball five, if anything, and cover one through four. But like, there is something to the fact that, yes, Kobe's numbers are bad, and I agree with you on the premise, because the numbers support it, that you're better off running offense and letting the defense determine who's open, as opposed to let's just give one guy the ball and let him bail us out. That sounds like a very smart argument from your perspective. But the sport is so different now. The quality of shot is so different now than it was going back 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it's really hard to compare, even with the statistical data trying to show parallels. There's just, there can't be a control group within the two.
And it's all what Kevin Pelton calls small sample size theater anyway, right? Like, once you confine it to game on the line or crunch time, like, the numbers just aren't big enough to be valid, right? So, and even, like, you know, baseball, where the numbers are easier to manage, you know, Bill James spent decades basically trying to find if clutchness even was a real thing, right? Like, are there people who really demonstrate, you know, more than randomness in crunch time, right? And couldn't really find an answer. So I don't assume that there even is this, right? What we're just arguing about is what happened, not do they have some human quality imbued into them, right? But what I'm pretty sure about is, okay, a lot of my career, I'm now realizing I didn't really know what was going on until now I've figured out better how to phrase it. But, like, I want to separate out talent from strategy, right? So, like, talent is what we're used to talking about. And frankly, talent solves the problem of bad strategy very often, right? So you can ISO Kobe. You can. And you'll win plenty of games that way. Like, because his talent just overwhelms your crappy strategy, right? I guess the article that I was trying to write was, but that's a bad strategy, and we can do better with that, right? Like, I know everybody wants to say, like, oh, Derek Fisher sucks or whatever. It's like, yeah, but you know what? He doesn't suck that bad, right? Like, give the ball to wide-open Derek Fisher, who, right, you can see on video is all alone.
Yes.
And, like, you will win more games.
Well, John Paxson, Steve Kerr, these aren't – Steve Kerr never averaged double digits in his career, was a bench player. But, you know, whether it's with the Spurs filling in for Tony Parker late against the Nets, or whether it's during time with the Bulls, you know, open at the right moment in time, in range and rhythm, like, that guy's a bucket, right? It's, you know, would you give him the ball and clear out? No. But again, in the context of end of game, I understand. I agree. That's fascinating. Okay, so let's get to the Lakers, because
let's do it.
Baxter Holmes is a guy that you hired, you brought to ESPN, and it was long rumored that this piece was out there. That, and it was when Magic resigned, I had friends within the Lakers that were like, you know, I heard there's a slam piece coming out, and it's not good towards Magic. And then it came out, and I'll just give you my kind of quick perspective I talked about a little bit earlier in the pod, is that there wasn't that many wow moments to me. Maybe it's because I know too much. Maybe it's because I talk to other people in professional sports who are like, yeah, well, you find former employees, and of course they're going to be bitter. With the exception of Rob Pelinka and his two bizarre lies, one which there is a possibility the Heath Ledger thing is a little more truthful than the Bob Myers thing, which you seem to make up. But it's pretty much what you thought, right? Like, Magic didn't show up to work, and then you know, wanted to you know, crack some skulls because he thought the people that were at work weren't good enough, right, and weren't listening to him. Rob Pelinka didn't really know what he was doing and kind of bullshitted his way through it like an agent would. On the other hand, at least he was totally in on the job. So, I don't know. I Jeannie's trying to figure out how to not lose control of her dad's franchise. You know, because if you let them, LeBron and his guys, they'll take over. They'll almost infest the place, and they almost pulled off a coup d'etat with coach and player and essentially being the active GM. Like, when you read the piece, what'd you think?
So on the one hand, I'm with you, like, not that surprising. There have been a lot of signals from Lakerland that it's not a well-run team for a long time. And I did, like, you know, I've heard from, you know, people who live and breathe and work in the NBA, and most of them are like, oh, yeah, like, you know, this is why, like, I wouldn't have my player go there, right? Because we've stuff we've known for years, and good on Baxter for getting it in print, right? So it's not as surprising. You know, it is surprising to Laker fans, I think, right? So, to me, the way the Lakers have been managed is like, it's very Hollywood, right? So, I think there was a time, like, when you would sign up, whatever. You have Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, and they're going to star in your movie, and it's going to be called Twins, and it'll succeed because it has Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, right? Well, that was the NBA that Dr. Buss ran, where you're like, you get Magic Johnson and Kareem, and it'll be good because you have Magic Johnson and Kareem, right? And since then, remember the whole talent strategy thing I was just saying? Like, now there are teams like the Warriors who don't just have really good talent, but they also have particularly good strategy, right? Like, the way that they move on the court makes Draymond Green from a guy who barely made the NBA into, you know, setting the all-time record for the greatest real plus-minus ever, right? Like, they're figuring out better strategies to get more out of people. And so now it's no longer enough to just have stars and, like, make it plug and play. Like, all the pieces have to work together. You have to make 1,000 great decisions a week and just keep going and be better than everybody at 1,000,000 different things. And that's where all these books I have in my attic about, you know, the truth and how things work best, like, there's a very alarming part of that Lakers story, which is nobody listens to anybody. They have all these people on staff, several who work there, and who they draft or who they sign in free agency or what the team strategy is made off the cuff by one or two people. Like, you just can't be smart enough. You can't outsmart the Warriors without doing, like, that thing where everyone spitballs their best ideas and you create an environment where people feel safe being vulnerable and you... You know, what about this? What about this little cat move we could do? What about maybe this draft pick? Or how about this trade? Or here's an unconventional thing. And you want to get all the best ideas together. But instead, they're not doing that. They're operating based on the idea that, like, LeBron's going to be Schwarzenegger, and we just got to go find DeVito, and then boom, that's the magic. It's all going to happen in magic, star-filled ways. But the reality is it's hard work. You got to climb Everest, right? You got to do all every day. You got to be a little better, work a little harder, be a little smarter. And then you might beat the Warriors. But this thing where you're just going to, like, get a big-name GM, a big-name president, a big-name superstar, like, it's not enough. It's not smart enough.
Well, I it's a great point you make. Let me give you another kind of hypothesis, and you tell me if you like it. Magic Johnson, he hit the genetic lottery, right? He's 6'9". When you're 6'9", you're only competing against, you know, 0.1% of the population. Then he was a 6'9" point guard. How many 6'9" point guards were there when he was playing? You're talking about none, right? None.
Yeah.
So did he hone some God-given skills of vision and athleticism? Sure. Remember, he actually wasn't a great, great athlete. Like, he wasn't. He was just very, very bright as a basketball player, had a magnetic kind of personality, had great vision, leadership, and he wasn't afraid of the big moment, but he also was 6'9" at a time in which there was nobody 6'9" that could handle the ball like him. So you're talking about actually competing against, let's get at best, 1% of the population. And you're born into the United States, you win the geographic lottery as well, right? Like, if you're born in some third world country, back then the chances you get out and get to training to play basketball, slim and none, right? So now you become the president. Think of the things, the times in which he's had to compete against 100% of the population, right? The 8 billion people, talk show host, coach, and now a president, like, literally anybody can be a president, anybody, of basketball operations. And maybe not anybody. You have to have a basketball acumen. You have to have a passion. You have to, all the other stuff. But you're competing against a much larger pool of people. And so hard work is more rewarded. Whereas, like, look, I'll tell you, as a former basketball player, all of us think, man, I busted my ass. And I was like, I remember summers. You get up in the morning and you go get shots up. Then you go lift or maybe meet with your trainer. Right. Then you go and you get protein shakes and you hang out and then you go work out again in the afternoon and play some ball. Like, that was a good day. That's not what in the real world. Like, you get up and you work and you make calls and you watch film and you do this, and you do that, and you talk to people. And, you know, it's like I think that a part of it is he's not actually used to having that advantage of being Magic Johnson. When you're president of basketball operations, you don't have the same advantage to just show up and, you know, tip the cap and be Jimmy Dugan at a League of Their Own baseball games.
It's an amazing point. And, you know, in Magic's defense, I think the way he reportedly did the job used to be very common in the NBA. That's how a lot of people did it. I know, like, when they started the Timberwolves, they asked Kevin McHale to run the team because he was the local basketball hero, and he was like, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, no, I just want to go hunting and fishing a lot. And they're like, that's okay, you can do that, right? And he's like, oh, okay. And, you know, so then he ran the team in his spare time, as I was told. So
who did that?
And Kevin McHale,
yeah,
in the early years of the Timberwolves.
Yep.
Like he told them he didn't have a lot of time. He wasn't that passionate about it. And they were like, okay, that's fine. I once.
But if you hire people around you that can do what you don't do, that can work, right? Hire people who know what you don't know. The real flaw to the Lakers is you had an inexperienced head coach, you had an inexperienced president who was never around, you had an inexperienced general manager, and they're the only team in the NBA that didn't have an assistant general manager. And they have a very slim scouting department in comparison to some of the other teams. Like, they didn't have the infrastructure for that type of leadership.
Well, and why would, like, and the people who did work there, they didn't even have in the meeting, right? So, like, why would you go there? So, you know, so the flip side of this, I think there's one other point, which is, you know, you can do things in a dumb way if 29 other teams also do things in a dumb way,
right?
But there was a time lots of NBA players smoked cigarettes, right? But, like, that was okay if the guy you guarded smoked cigarettes or didn't train well. But now, like, that's much harder. Everyone runs faster, jumps higher. Same in the front office, right? So across the hall from the Lakers is Lawrence Frank, right? That's the president of the Clippers. And he's, I don't know, 5'8"?
Yeah.
And was the guy who David Thorpe used to call him canteen guy because he ran the canteen at the five-star camp, right? Like, you know, he was lucky to find a place to sleep at five-star camp because the bunks were all taken, right? Like, that hard work thing you're talking about, this is the opposite of Magic Johnson, right? Like, Lawrence Frank had to scrap and scrap and scrap and scrap and scrap. And I remember I used to cover the Nets team here when he was the head coach there, and they were not a good team when he started coaching the team. And he had to, like, figure out how to connect with Jason Kidd. And, well, you know, and eventually they became good, and Lawrence got a career out of the deal. But, you know, he knows every back alley of NBA scrap, right? And every little thing you can do to be a little better. And they made a bunch of trades that didn't win them season ticket holders that day, but long-term are going to make it so that for real now this summer, the free agent, that whichever free agent the Lakers thought would be their savior, is a pretty good bet to go to the Clippers instead, because that whole operation is just very professionally run. And that's what the Lakers have to be competing with now, which is a new thing in the NBA. And they're just running an old play. Like, I said this yesterday to somebody on the phone, but, like, you know, the Lakers are a Cadillac, which used to be considered a great car.
Yeah.
Like, now you got to be better than a Tesla, right? Like, you got to redesign the whole Cadillac. It's just, it doesn't work anymore.
It's a great, great point. Okay, so what do you think what do you think happens? Forecast for me what happens end of the season in the offseason for the Lakers. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I've been sniffing around all of these, like, where are all the free agents going to land? And the word Lakers is never said, right? There's a lot of excitement about the Clippers and the Nets and whatever. I mean, it depends who you believe on the Knicks front, but there aren't enough top tier free agents to go around. I think they're going to have to try to get Anthony to they might have the best possible offer for Anthony Davis, right? I could be wrong, but I don't think the Lakers are going to get a top tier free agent. I think of course the worst thing you can do is like what the Knicks did in LeBron's free agency, right? Which is where you marshal all of your free agent money. You really hope to get a certain player. You don't get the player, so you just give all that money to somebody who's not anything like as good, right? That's when they got Amar'e Stoudemire in New York. I could see them doing that, but with the possible exception of Jimmy Butler, I think that the Lakers will not get a top-tier free agent, and I'll have to try to get Anthony Davis, and then I don't know how good they'll be without all the supporting cast they would need.
And then how does Anthony Davis actually fit with LeBron James is one of my questions. Like, I get that he can make up for mistakes defensively, and there'll be a lot more as LeBron can't exert himself the way he used to and beat the eraser defensively. He could guard four positions. But I just, like, all of his centers have either been solely rim protectors, or, you know, he really wants a power forward to be a stretch five. And Anthony Davis can shoot, but he's not a shooter. That's not what he does. Like, I kind of feel like it's a weird pursuit of a guy that's not as good of a fit. Like, there's been a lot of talk about Brad Beal. Like, Brad Beal feels like a better fit than Anthony Davis does.
Or both would be good.
Yeah.
Could you take both?
Sure. Sure, but I mean, like, how are you going to get them both?
I mean, no, I don't think you can. It's a real problem, right? I mean, LeBron has signed up for the first time. He doesn't have real leverage over the team, right? He signed a contract for 4 years, and And I think at the time he signed it, had every reason to believe with his own knowledge of behind the scenes how the league works that he could attract stars a number of ways, right? But it just looks worse now. You know, their competitors look better. They didn't get Anthony Davis. The free agency game has changed. The Lakers front office has a terrible reputation now. I see a little bit of desperation, right? So, yeah, I could see that you'd worry about the fit with Anthony Davis, but gosh, like, if he's the only star you have a chance of getting, I could, you know, and you have a couple years left of your prime, don't you just have to get him?
Yeah, I think you do. Okay, so you said, so you're in New York. The talk is that now the Nets are a destination. The Knicks, I mean, the only thing, there's two things holding you back from the Knicks. One, I still think a lot of these guys would be seen as uncool. And that's the thing, is seen as uncool for taking James Dolan's money. Regardless of the fact that anybody who pays attention knows he has nothing to do with basketball, with the exception of every once in a while showing up at Knicks game and being an asshole. Right? Like, he has no, he has the unique ability to, like, once a year going like, oh yeah, that asshole owns the team. That's right. You know, outside of that, he really doesn't have much to do with basketball, but guys don't, you know, you don't, you feel like you won't be at the cool table if you're taking his money. And then the Nets, it's like, look, I get Brooklyn is a super cool place to live. J.J. Redick didn't even move. He still lives there. Unbelievable place to live. Unbelievable arena. New ownership. Huge money. But it's still the Nets, right? Like, it's just, it's not even on the island of Manhattan. So who do they get?
Well, I think the possible appeal for the Clippers and the Nets, I think, is similar, right? The Clippers are the Clippers, right? The Clippers are to L.A. as the Nets are to New York, right? They're teams on the upswing that are fighting reputations. The appeal is, I think, players are smart and have this anxiety that wedding themselves to a dumb team could be doom, right? We've seen it before. So there's a little sense that, you know, the Nets just achieved big improvement, right? They took a player the Lakers couldn't make sense of and made him a productive all-star. However that works is a little weird. Whatever the team dynamic is, a little hard to fathom exactly. But you want to be what David Thorpe calls rowing, and you want to be rowing your boat in the faster river, right? Like, you know, you can row your boat, but man, if D'Angelo Russell can improve like that and you're a team that doesn't know how to do that, that mm-hmm. sucks, right? So I just think that they have a little bit of team culture. I grew up in Portland, as you know, and I probably sound like a Blazers homer, but, you know, when Rodney Hood and Enes Kanter and Seth Curry all play it, you know, who are all kind of off the NBA scrap heap, all play really important and productive minutes, I think it's a little bit of a signal that, like, maybe the organization knows how to do something that everybody doesn't know how to do, and you kind of want to get some of that juice, you know? So I think that's the potential draw, right? So maybe, let's talk about Kevin Durant in particular. There's one more huge problem with him on the Knicks, which is he's the most sensitive guy in the world.
Right, and he's going to be in New York?
Right? I mean, yeah. I mean, he's on Twitter all the time, burner accounts, defending himself against every accusation, right? Like, lots of very thick-skinned people don't like the New York media, right? And it's particularly the Knicks media, right? That's where the expectations are crazy high. I feel like they eat him alive, right? I feel like this would end really ugly. There's no way, in my mind, they're going to go from the worst team in the NBA to fulfilling the expectations of Knicks fans with one free agent signing, right? So there will be disappointment, and it will be a long process. And, you know, Kevin Durant's not getting younger. And I think there's going to be this weird gap that's just going to fry him. And in the end, I think that's why, if you were honestly advising Kevin Durant, I think you'd tell him to go elsewhere.
Plus, how many other people have tried to climb Everest in New York? I mean, we could kind of go through the it reminds me of Goonies. One of my favorite movies is Goonies. They have all these I forget the name of the explorer who died, right? Like, guys, he could, you know, like, this was his quest to get past One-Eyed Willie, and we've gone further than him. It's like, yeah, but, like, look at all the people, the explorers that died trying to find One-Eyed Willie. How many people have tried to, like, Larry Brown, Phil Jackson, obviously his management, Mike D'Antoni, dude, I could go through them. Rick Pitino, Pat Riley, and then players from Ewing. They did get to the finals. Granted, Jordan didn't play. Ewing to Penny Hardaway, Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony. At various times in their career, Jason Kidd. Like, there's a ridiculous number. They've had some unbelievable names as players that haven't been able to find One-Eyed Willie or to climb Everest, if you will. And, like, I get it. I think Kevin Durant's the best player in the game. But there's been other dudes that are close to that peak, and they haven't gotten there, and they're not as sensitive as you. And there was better infrastructure then than there is now. And, you know, out of dust, you're going to be an NBA champ. That I find that hard to believe.
You said better than me. I feel exactly the same way. The only way is if you're like the gambler who takes all your money and puts it all on like Red 32 or whatever, and you know, because of what you said, heaven forbid Kevin Durant does lead them to the promised land, then it might be his only chance. You know, he has openly said in the past in angrier moments that he thinks he's the best ever, you know, better than LeBron, better than all that, and if he wants to prove that, you know, he's running out of ways to do it the conventional way. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to have more championships. He's not going to have better overall career stats or whatever. But I guess if you do climb that particular Everest where everyone else failed, maybe that's the argument I could make, even though I don't really like it. I think what you just said is the same. This is exactly what I was saying about the Lakers just thinking that magical people will solve it, right? Like, you have to actually have better run front office, right? You have to actually make smarter decisions habitually. And that's where the Knicks have been like, no, we'll just, okay, that didn't work. Great. Phil, get Phil, you know, like, oh, that doesn't work. Oh, I'll get, you know, Amari, Carmelo, you know, whatever. Just someone with a big name.
Yeah.
Solve it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've seen that with TV shows before, right? Or movies where you try and put a big name in with a bad script. Right. You know,
yeah,
it's
exactly
a,
right.
You know, and it doesn't, does that might look good in the press clippings, whatever, but once you watch the movie, like, ooh. Waterworld, perfect example, well, right? Spend a bunch of money, put Kevin Costner, Kevin Costner, you're like, that movie sucked. And you can't fool people.
My dad's a doctor, and there's a diagnosis component of this, right? Which is like if you're really brilliant, you'll be able to figure out like what's actually causing the disease, right? Which is totally different from like, give them the famous medicine, right? Like, yeah, the famous medicine is miraculous if applied in the right place in the right way.
Right.
You don't just give it for sick people. You get the diagnosis, right? It just means you have to really understand the game, which I think is why a lot of these guys hate advanced analytics. By these guys, I mean GMs of a generation ago, because analytics are coming with their message of like, oh, this is hard. This is hard work. You have to really understand how these things all fit together, and it's not eye test. And it's not fun and easy, and it's not one flight to Sarajevo when you watch a guy in the gym and say, that's my guy.
Right.
You have to really understand the dynamics of the game and what matters. Like, is reach more important than height? Like, you have to know the answer to that, right? And on times a million. And I think that's where, you know, this job of running an NBA team, like running a lot of businesses these days, has become way more demanding than it used to be, just to keep up.
And
the world's more competitive.
What do you
think? Just hard job.
What do you think of Kawhi?
I mean, obviously he's amazing. I'm a little. It feels like a little bit of a, you know, best player in the world. Like this week, you know, I just feel like, oh, we've had the best player in the world every different week of the playoffs. We've been a different person, you know. But yeah, he's got some Michael Jordan, right? It does feel at times that whatever problem there is in the basketball court, Kawhi has a solution to it, including that four bouncing shot to beat the Sixers, right? Like, it does feel like he can do anything. And, you know, hats off to him for that. And one other thing, shout out to load management, right? That guy, Alex McKechnie, used to run everything for the Lakers, and they let him go during the lockout. This is exactly the kind of thing, right? This is exactly the player the Lakers would like to have, and I predict he'll stay with the Raptors in part because of that guy who the Lakers already let go.
You think he'll stay with the Raptors?
I think now that we're in the finals, I think he'll take this short deal, right? I think it'll just be too harsh to leave right now. I think I'll do like a 1+1 or something.
I don't know. I just feel like he's a you can't apply to Kawhi Leonard. You can't apply anything from anyone. He's just a different cat. Like all these guys are kind of different cats.
Yeah.
And he's just a different, like anybody else, you get to the finals in Toronto, you get that kind of love and this kind of team, and you go like, oh, no way he leaves, except yeah. Kawhi Leonard. Like, it just feels like he's going to do his own thing, how he wants to do his own thing, and that's how he's going to do his thing.
He does seem part computer, for sure.
Yes. The Jordan thing is interesting because I guess I take it too literally, right? Like Jordan was a wing who became a great post player, right. Whereas Kawhi was a post player who's become a great wing. But I do understand that. And he's also a guy, Jordan was a guy who wasn't always a willing passer early in his career. But when people will remember, when they finally won a championship against the Lakers, he averaged 11 assists a game in his first NBA Finals because the Lakers wanted to make somebody else beat him. Still averaged 31, but he averaged almost like a triple-double. It's like 11 assists because the second they helped, he was a willing passer. And if we watched as that series evolved with the Bucks, some of his teammates, one, started making shots that was more assists, and then two, he kind of started to figure out what they were doing defensively and who was going to be open and where they were going to be open, and he became a more willing passer. So I got it there. I still think that KD is more the best player. I was impressed by his desire and ability to shut down James Harden in the playoffs. We have no memory at all. Like first two games of the playoffs, he was trying to be a good teammate, and people were like, "Hey, why aren't you just killing them?" And he's like, "All right, fuck it, I'll just go score 45." And then he goes and scores 45, and like, oh, he's the best player on earth, and he's the only one doing anything consistently against the Rockets. Then he gets hurt, and the other guys pick it up, and like, ah, they didn't need him. Like, what? Like, we're making it like some impossible journey for Kevin Durant because he left the Thunder and went to a team that had previously won 73 games. But if I had to have one guy, I would probably have Kawhi, even though I think KD's better only because, well, Kawhi's younger, and he hasn't been as injury-prone, right?
We did this little internal exercise here at True Hoop, and I've just opened the Google Doc. All right, so this is just over the last few weeks. Giannis, popular pick for MVP, likely to be named the MVP soon, right? His only rival in that debate was James Harden. Kevin Durant, you just discussed. There was a time early in the playoffs where Nikola Jokic was seen as, like, maybe that guy who was having the best playoff. I'm here to tell you that of everybody with a big name in the NBA, the one with the best plus-minus in the playoffs, and it's not close, is Joel Embiid. He was more than plus 20 through the whole playoffs and against the Raptors in that series, which, you know, they almost won. Plus 20, literally a blowout every second Embiid's on the court, whether Kawhi's on the court or not. Don't forget LeBron James, right? We recently did a little thing about if you were to trade LeBron for Zion. Don't get me started on that, but it's the Lakers who'd have to add a sweetener because LeBron isn't good enough. So that's an argument for Zion. Anthony Davis is in the MVP conversation when he's healthy. Paul George led the league in real plus minus this year. Then there's Kawhi. And of course we haven't mentioned Steph Curry. Like, I think you could make a case for all of them and more. And so to me, with all of that and this, like you're saying about the short memory, it's like, look, it depends. You know, there's a lot of good arguments you can make. The notion that it's clearly Kawhi to me now is like, come on. But that's just because they won the last series. I dare anyone to make that case if the Raptors happen to lose against the Bucks or the Sixers.
That ball doesn't go in against the Sixers and they go to overtime, yeah. Right? Like a fadeaway, a deep two that hits the front rim twice, yeah. The back rim twice, and then or the side rim twice and then goes in. Like that shot doesn't go in. And now what are we saying about Kawhi Leonard? We do become result-oriented instead of process-oriented.
Oh, like crazy. And tiny results, you know?
Yeah.
I sort of tweeted something about this, and somebody replied, like, recency bias is the best bias.
That's funny.
That's true.
That's very, very funny. Last thing. There are people that so the team that supposedly had become Team Analytics was the Rockets, right? Like they're the ones right. we got smart people. They're in the front office, and we went and got James Harden, and then we slowly kind of figured it out. And last year they were close, and then they lose Ariza, lose a couple of the pieces, but they didn't have Chris Paul. Now they have Chris Paul. They come up short, and then at the time of this recording. This is on Wednesday. The NBA Finals start on Thursday. Adrian Wojnarowski said, hey, basically the Rockets, you can have anybody you want, although the Harden, you'd probably have to move, you know, Everest in order to get Harden. So that means Chris Paul, but you got to take Chris Paul's contract. And I also think that some of this is overblown. Lots of good teams would say, like, yeah, you can trade for anybody, but you're going to have to take all our crummy contracts as well, right? Like, yeah, sure, you can have P.J. Tucker. You got to take Chris Paul's deal as well and give us some, give us a Pirates ransom in return. I would make the case that I actually understand this. If you can't beat the Golden State Warriors down two starters, they didn't have DeMarcus Cousins, didn't have Kevin Durant. If you can't beat them at home, in a game six, when Chris Paul's healthy and James Harden's healthy, you can't beat them then, you are never going to beat them. Change strategies. Don't keep pounding your head against the wall and be like, at some point it's not going to hurt. I actually understand this. I don't know if it makes them better, but I do think that kind of bailing on this current group might be the smartest and most pertinent thing in order to continue trying different ways to get to the top of the mountain.
I hear you.
It sounds like you disagree. You're allowed to disagree. Go.
I mean, look, the not to always bring up the Blazers, but they were swept 4-0 by the Pelicans a year ago and didn't really change anything and made it to the Western Conference Finals. Like there was dramatic improvement from maybe luck or, you know, maybe those guys building a little more trust together, right? Like Myers Leonard has been not a great NBA player, but had something special from his teammates trusting him in a certain way and, you know, had the best game of life. It's this kind of stuff, though, arguably, you know, you can build more trust so, like, Eric Gordon feels more empowered to do more stuff, right? Or I could see the argument. That's what I would say if I were bringing them all back. I don't think the Rockets, and Daryl Morey will admit this, right? They're not particularly good at that, right? They do, like, arbitrage. They're like, we're going to purchase this asset and increase its value and then move it, right? That's how they got James Harden. That's how they got good. But this whole kind of how do you blend these personalities and how do you build trust and all that stuff, that's not what they're best at. So if you're not good at that and you're going to need to win by just having more talent, then hell yeah, I guess shake it up. Why not? And I think, and look, we were talking about the Lakers and the Knicks who have tons of money and a poor ability to get talent for that money. That's your Chris Paul match, right?
With the Lakers?
Or the Knicks. Either one, right? Yeah. They're the ones who just are dying to throw dollars at somebody.
Yeah. And they can take on those deals. I don't know how it works with the Lakers, right? You probably have to find a third team for Lonzo Ball. And then what do they look? I mean, I guess you get the Banana Boat crew back together again. Hell, Carmelo wants to sign him off the scrap heap.
Oh, don't do that.
I know. Can't play.
That would be the worst part.
I mean, it'd be amazing. Dwayne Wade out of retirement, right? Get him back together.
Do that.
Is that movie with Sylvester Stallone and some of those old cats that when they're, oh man, they're they're all like over the hill. Oh man, I'll look it up as we're speaking. I don't know what you do there. I do think they
I was thinking more about Gung Ho. You know what I'm talking about? You remember Gung Ho?
Yeah, with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, where they're like, you know, the plant's going to close down, but all the old guys have to like overperform for a short test, right? It's like that.
The one I'm.
I don't know what your Sylvester Stallone movie is.
The Expendables.
Is that The Expendables. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah. The Expendables, where you got like all these old has-beens all kind of together, right? Like the Expendables had Sly Stallone, Dolph Lundgren, Steve Austin, Jason Statham, Dolph Lundgren, Jet Li, right? Who else did it have? I think Mickey Rourke, Like, dude, just a bunch of guys collecting checks. I think Arnold was even in the movie a little bit as well. Right? You just have a bunch of dudes that have all had plastic surgeries and roid up just to be in one last movie. Just reminds me of what that Laker team would look like.
I dare you to share that idea with LeBron James.
The Expendables?
Yeah. You guys could be like retired Sly Stallone.
You did have a Zion Williamson opinion. There are some people, and I kind of get it. Like, hey, isn't Ja Morant, doesn't he have a chance to affect your wins and losses more than you? It might not affect your bottom line as much as Zion Williamson. Like, Zion Williamson feels like a small ball five. Ja Morant feels like kind of a game changing ball screen point guard, you know, playing downhill. What is your opinion of Zion Williamson, the impact he'll have in the NBA?
Oh, I think he, because of his body type, right? Like, and how hard he plays, all you're counting on is some continued skill development for a very young guy to have someone who has a real chance at being, you know, as good as anyone ever, which isn't true of anyone in the draft most years, right? Maybe it's not a 50% likelihood, but it's not a 0%, right? It's a 5 to 20% likelihood that he becomes just the best player on the team that reels off championships. So just for that possibility, I would take him 100 times out of 100. But also looking, I mean, maybe Russell Westbrook is a bad example right now for Ja Morant, right? Like,
yeah,
how are you going to be better at that job than Russell Westbrook was? And it's been a tricky road for him.
Yeah, no question. Because that style of basketball, you know, where you have to get to the rim, at some point your athleticism does fail you, and you got to be able to do what Lillard can do, what Steph can do, you know, and what some of the you just have to be able to shoot the ball more. Like, it's become a shooter's game. It's kind of annoying to me as a guy who wasn't a shooter. It's like when you go to play pickup, and instead of picking up teams or doing, I hate next five, but instead of doing that, it's like, all right, we're going to shoot 3-point shots to see who plays. It always favors the shooter. Right? It always favors the shooter. But that's the way the NBA has kind of trended. It always favors the shooter, and I don't think that's who Ja Morant is. The Zion thing, the fascinating thing is going to be the weight. Can you play? What weight can you play at for 82 games? Not hurt yourself,
right?
And yet, does he maintain his explosiveness? Does he become more explosive? Is he a different guy? Some people are different guys when they lose all that weight. But
yeah.
I do.
Great point.
Yeah, I think worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, he's a tremendous small ball five who's an all-star, borderline all-star. Best case scenario, yeah, I mean, if he starts where he can really make jump shots, he's got a high basketball IQ, he can post up, he's crazy explosive already, and I would think if he loses 25 pounds, like, we haven't even begun to see the freak show, because he hasn't hurt that second spurt yet of, like his body shaped up in 1 year at Duke. But it's totally different when you change your diet and you're playing 82 games and you got a real strength. If he hires a body guy and a you know, dietitian, and he gets really after it, like, I'm with you. He could be a freak show if he stays healthy. My fear is what happened to that shoe is what's going to happen to his knees and hips and back. There's just so much torque there.
Oh, so much force. I'll tell you what excites me about him most. And I'll be honest, I don't watch a ton of college basketball. Like, it's such a... The season's so busy. So I'm not an expert on any of these players. I'll just say that up front. But I'll tell you what, watching Zion Williamson gives me this certain excitement, which is when Draymond Green is at his best, there's a pace of, like, physical play mixed with decision making where at both ends he's just performing at a level that, like, David Thorpe and I have been jokingly calling it the Cuisinart. But, like, the Warriors are running in this way where I literally just, it doesn't feel like the same game anymore. It just feels like, you know, it ends up in an Alfonso McKinney layup or Steph 3 or some other crazy thing, but everything's so forceful but also precise all at the same time. And to me, like, I guess that's going to be what you have to beat to win in the future, and not a lot of players are cut out for that, but this guy might be.
When I say Steph Curry, what do you think?
Miracle. Yeah, I'm delighted. I mean, it's good for basketball, right? My favorite thing about it and I'm sure you've seen this, and maybe it annoys you, but you know, when he made that shot to win the game winner against the Thunder in Oklahoma City a few years ago, I ended up interviewing a guy who supervises recess at an elementary school, and you know, every kid, like the bell went off, and then they would not go back in. Like, we have a real problem in America with people not wanting to play sports, right? Kids are playing video games. And, you know, I don't know what the solution is, but it might be Steph Curry, right? Because you can imagine, every fourth grader can imagine they might be that size, right? And if you can win a game from 37 feet, you might want to play basketball. And so to me, that's a super valuable thing. His ability to deliver delight is ridiculous and very valuable to the NBA.
I completely agree. I mean, it is the combination of, it's like, you know, what is the definition of luck is when timing and preparation come together. But like, I mean, the NBA kind of lucked into him, right? Where you have a guy who, you know, two parent home, two athletes, humbled because people passed on him going into college, humbled some even by his, you know, early reputation in the NBA, and just humbled basically by his upbringing. On the other hand, so ridiculously skilled, and the type of skill which, like, the new NBA thrives on, you know, at just the right moment in time. Like, if he comes along at any other moment in the NBA's history, he doesn't have this kind of career. Or if the Bucks, remember the Bucks were offered he and Monte Ellis, you know, like, imagine what would happen if the Bucks, like, you know, we'll take a shot at Steph. Like, imagine if that happens.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
There's Thorpe and I used to joke about Guillermo Diaz. Do you remember Guillermo Diaz?
Yes. Just right guy, wrong time, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it wasn't that long before Steph came along, right? Like, and everyone was like, oh, well, he's kind of small. He doesn't have a position. I don't know if he's a point guard or shooting guard. But, you know, he could shoot like crazy, super athlete, and literally couldn't make the NBA. Not saying he was Steph, but it was a kind of player that, you know, it took some, you know, and Steph wouldn't have been Steph, I don't think, without Steve Kerr there.
Correct.
You know, they both have this similar kind of, yeah, it all matters like crazy, but that's not the end of the world. You know, we'll let... There's a little bit of shrugging, which I think is super important because it lets other people thrive, right? Like, Draymond Green's been kind of a hot mess in a lot of ways. A lot of teams wouldn't have put up with, you know, Snapchatting a speedometer at 116 miles an hour going into the Oakland tunnel, or various things that have happened on social media with strippers or whatever, and things in nightclubs late at night. But there's a little bit of like, whatever, you know, crap happens that, you know, LeBron doesn't put up with that, but Steph does, and you know, and Kevin Durant's a touchy guy, as we talked about earlier. I think it's no coincidence that Kerr and Curry are the ones who keep saying that Kevin's the best player in the world, because they know that he needs to hear that,
right,
which is important. Curry doesn't need to hear that, right? And that's important, because that lets Kevin Durant be on that team.
I also think that Kerr is not... He's not as hard driving about turnovers, right? Like, Steph's a high turnover guy.
Right.
You mentioned style of play. Like, everybody, you know, we all point out like what he does off a ball screen, but it's his ability to, within that system with Draymond, with KD, with Andre Iguodala, to play without the basketball as well. So he can play both. He's not really a point guard, but he also gets a chance to do some point guard stuff. Like, it's the, all the planets being aligned at the right moment. And then, he's, for the most part, had the goods to deliver. I'll be interested to see if he's able to consistently deliver in the finals, something that in the past he struggled to do, but he's had, I think, reasonable explanations, maybe not excuses, injuries, fatigue, where he's not hurt and he can't be tired after that timeout. Fair?
Yeah, I'm worried. I mean, I guess this is the value of Durant, is I think Steph's landing in the finals. Brett Brown has this phrase, deliver the players to April. Right, which comes from Spurs, where, you know, you want to, like Tim Duncan would arrive at the beginning of the playoffs and played 1,800 minutes in years that, like, James Harden played 3,000. And that would make him less injured, faster, higher jumping, all these things, right? And less likely to get hurt, too. I think Steph's arriving a little fresher than most years. But I do think that games in November totally matter to how tired you are in June if you don't have meaningful breaks in between. I've done all this sports science research. You need, like, you know, five efforts in 2 weeks is the maximum your body can sustain, and any five max efforts in 2 weeks without it degrading your performance and increasing your injury risk. So these top NBA players do that every 2 weeks. They break that rule, right? Kawhi is the only example we have of someone who's really been fairly aggressively managed recently to reduce that, and is now we're all thinking the MVP of the playoffs, right? So, like, you know, they're all a little beat up. They're all a little degraded. But maybe because KD handled so many of the plays where Steph would have been the high exertion guy, you know, all that dribbling around and beating people and recognizing what the defense is, and that's all super high exertion. So I think he probably is a little bouncier than most years at the time. And so that's why I think the Warriors are going to win. But yeah, if they get hurt, if Steph's hurt, like, that's scary, right? And you know, this Warriors team without KD and Steph is I have to think is bad.
No, I would.
You agree?
Yes. But I mean, but he's not. He's the healthiest he's ever been. I think at this point in time, and the least he's had the least tread worn off his tires because they've had this long break and getting ready. And the one thing that he's done a great job of is when he has time off and he comes back, he's usually pretty sharp right away. Hey, listen. Go ahead. One more time.
Oh, I will think he's freaky strong.
Yeah.
I think it was the same Baxter Holmes once did a story about how he worked out. And they, I think that like there was a movement. It might have been like a weighted lunge or some kind of squat where Steph could lift the most on the team. And I think you can see that sometimes where he gets takes contact in the air and he just absorbs it very well with good balance. I think he's little, but he's not weak.
No, I think some of that is the Steve Nash balance stuff that they do as well, that when Steve was a kind of consultant to them, I think he worked out as well. Henry, this has been awesome. Awesome. How can people download your pod and get all of your stuff?
It's truehoop.com. That's where I live. Truehoop.com.
Thanks for coming on with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Super fun.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, that's it for All Ball. My thanks to Henry Abbott. And a reminder to listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show every day, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, 12 to 3 Pacific. It is on XM Series, 203 and 217. You go to foxsportsradio.com and you can either listen to it streaming or you can find a local affiliate. So we got plenty of ways. Or you can download the daily or weekly or best of podcast wherever you download this podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to download, subscribe, and rate. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.